This is Wage World, where we talk to the most interesting people in the world on KABF 88.3, the voice of the people.
You want to see how the other half lives? You want to see how we get around? Why don't you come visit me on the east side of town?
This is Wade Rathke. You're listening to Wage World. It's Friday morning, 9 to 9:30 Central Standard Time in the United States, and your time for the voice of the people. Welcome to the east side of town so that we can talk about how the other half lives and what life is like here living in Wage World. Whether that's the east side of Little Rock, where KABF 88.3 FM is located, or the east side of New Orleans, Nairobi, Bengaluru, Bristol, or Bombay. Points east and west, where we are either rebroadcast or live streamed at www.kabf.org. A podcast will be available of this show on Monday at that website. You know the story on Wage World. We talk to the most interesting people in the world. Today, we're talking to Gary Davenport. What am I saying? Gary Davenport. Welcome to Wage World.
Hi.
Gary is the project coordinator for the Mahoney County Land Bank. Now, where is that and what is the land bank? This is very interesting to everyone.
So we are located in Northeast Ohio in the city of Youngstown. And the land bank is an organization that state law allows to bring value out of property that's been abandoned and in a lot of cases blighted. So tax delinquency, we correct that, and we help residents get lost next door to them, help take houses down while we do that.
Gotcha. So you're living and working in the what we now call the Rust Belt. Obviously, Youngstown Steel was a very common name. We've got, you know, known in song and legend. This was Steel Town, wasn't it?
It was. There's some people that still think it is.
Well, we don't want to take away anybody's good thoughts, but
no.
What that's meant is a lot of transition in terms of population and real property locations and value in Youngstown, hasn't it?
Yeah, I was walking downtown, and there was a poster, a giant billboard on the side of the building, and it was a Forbes magazine cover, and it said something like, Youngstown, cheapest housing market in America. And the truth is, it's really the most devalued market in America because of disinvestment and depopulation over time.
So how many properties, I may not be asking the right question, but how many properties are in the land bank now, and how long has it been going there in Mahoney County?
Well, our model of land banking is on demand. So when there is a call for us to acquire a property, typically with some kind of use for it afterwards, we acquire it. We carry about 1,000 properties in our inventory at any given time. And I'd say about a quarter of them are in transition. We're going to give them, sell them or give them to somebody, a government or a resident at some point. And some of them are long term. Other land banks do a thing where they drink from the fire hose and they take everything that is tax delinquent without question. And
wow,
it's a different idea. Yeah.
Is it connected to the city or the county? I mean, is that the push out there in other land banks that they just want them to deal with all tax delinquent properties? Or,
well, we work with the city land bank in Youngstown, and I think that they're focused heavily on economic development for the city. So they have different history from us and a slightly different focus, but we can do a lot of the same things. We work within plans set by the city and their planning partners. With everything that we do, if there's no plan, we do the best thing possible, but when there's a plan, we contribute to it. So we are separate from the city and you know, different focus, and we work closely with them all the time.
But you're a public agency.
Yeah, we are a private nonprofit, and our board is consisted of representatives of all the different types of government in Mahoney County. So small cities, small townships, large cities, large townships. There's a public sector representative, private sector representative. So we work closely with government, but we are technically, legally, we are a private nonprofit.
Ah, even though, and it was just the enabling legislation that was passed by the legislature in Ohio.
Right.
Oh, okay. Well, that's even better, isn't it? So I know in New Orleans after Katrina, where we had many vacant properties, particularly in the Ninth Ward, there was sort of a house next door or lot next door program where there was a way that you could apply to acquire the lot next door, just literally, if you were willing to maintain it and da-da-da-da-da. Is that some of what happens, or is it mainly really economic development? And if so, what kind of economic development is taking advantage of your land bank?
Recently, we did land assembly where we acquired everything in a given geography and partnered with Joseph Company International, and that's the Chilcan plant project in Ohio. It was announced several weeks ago, and factories, and it's a whole section of the city. And what happened there was we did land assembly for everything that was vacant land, unoccupied land. And we went after it through tax foreclosure, which is our bread and butter. Everything comes to us through a tax foreclosure on delinquent taxes. And that's the first step that we've taken into economic development. And we worked hand in hand with the city because the city could do some things that we can't. So we did what we could and contributed to that project. Otherwise, when we work with business, oftentimes it is, I have a warehouse or a garage or my main site is here, and there's all this vacant property next door to it. I wish I could just fence it all in. And if the land is eligible for acquisition, that's what we help them do. So most of the time it is an application from somebody off the street, and they are asking about the possibility of taking over the land next door to them. 90% of the time it is somebody with kids that want their kids, want a bigger yard, they want to put a fence around something, secure their property and the property value. So most of the time it is residential. And our business and partnerships are fewer and newer.
Gotcha. Now, repeat the name of that project you were just talking about on your land assemblage, because I couldn't hear it quite correctly. That sounds big.
Yeah, it's called the Chilcan plant, and there's a beverage can that chills itself when you open it. And they're going to build it on the east side of Youngstown.
Well, that's got to mean some jobs for you too, huh, Gary?
I hope so. It does. I'm not sure of the details. I know that there are permanent jobs attached to that project, and I was happy to hear that they were talking in terms of permanent jobs. And there will be temporary jobs for the construction too, I'm sure.
And how much property did you have to put together? Was this a couple of acres or 20 lots, or how do you do that?
Several acres, and it was about 80 lots. What we do, and this is for our residential request of single lots too, the process is the same. You check eligibility. Is the land tax delinquent for 1 year? The treasurer certifies that. If that is the case, we can go after it and take a picture and create an affidavit stating that this property meets the other standards for tax foreclosure. And then it goes to the county prosecutor. The county prosecutor has it for a period of time. They do a tax foreclosure just like it was for the treasurer. And it involves all the things involved in foreclosure, reaching out to the parties that have stake in the property, et cetera. If it is a successful foreclosure, then we will receive a sheriff's deed. And after we receive the sheriff's deed, if there is a pending balance from a client, we'll ask for that and then create a deed in their name and record it.
Gotcha.
And typically it takes a year to a year and a half. On the scale of something bigger for economic development, you do all that within a contract that you wait until you have all the parcels in hand, and then you do a gigantic set of deeds. And I think it's the same thing. It's just different scales and different end uses, and most people just want to mow it and not have to worry about the thing next door to them.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. And obviously, you don't have the power of eminent domain.
We do not. That is in the city's hands and other municipalities that have the ability to do that and work with us if that ever becomes relevant. But we can't take property that is occupied. So if there is a house and it is tax delinquent and the city would like us to knock it down with our hardest hit fund and we go and see anybody there, we don't pursue it.
Gotcha.
So even if someone's squatting and they may not have a legal right to be on the property, if it is occupied, if the house is occupied, we don't take it.
Interesting. And when we were talking recently about land purchase agreements and some of these kinds of things that we've been talking about on a couple of different Wage World shows, You've been running into some of that, not directly with your land bank, but just in general in the real estate market in Youngstown these days, haven't you?
I have. I wish I could tell you how many, because we don't have that data quantified here.
Right.
And I found a cache of a little over 60 land contracts that were scanned 3 years ago. And, you know, I don't know what the picture is now, but my interaction is mostly when people come in and they want the lot next door to them, again, for their kids or just to expand their yard, have a little more control over the property, and they're in a land contract. And if they are about a year out from completing it, because our process for acquisition and transfer takes about a year, we'll work with them as if they were the owner or they're going to be the owner of the property. If it's longer than that, we'll consider every case individually, but typically we try to make sure that we're transferring to an adjacent owner. And there are a lot of people that come in here on land contract with those kind of questions. And the land contracts they vary. They're all different from one another. Some of them are handwritten. So that's about as direct as I see the land contracts. We do not hold any ourselves. We're not a landlord. Houses that we own are typically for demolition. And about 5 or 10% that we acquire for demolition, we offer in rehab. But I see that people with land contracts come in, and they're all very different. And I think that there's some standard that isn't being met. And maybe there's not a standard for it in Ohio. I'm not sure.
Well, we're certainly all looking into it. And Ohio is, in a way, it's ground zero for some things like these land banks. It's also, could be close to ground zero in this land purchase contract situation as well. And it sounds like it's not just lower income properties that are being pushed for land contracts in Ohio. From what we've looked at in terms of realty track listings and transfers from Fannie Mae to some of these equity companies, these are not, 1,000, 2,000. This is $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 houses sometimes that are on land contract. And you're seeing that just as a sort of ubiquitous part of the real estate market in Youngstown now, aren't you?
Yeah, I can say personally I was looking at a house on the market and it was being offered over its actual value, in my opinion. And one of the things that the owner was willing to think about was instead of doing anything different about the offering price, keeping it the same but allowing us to enter into a land contract. That is the first time I had experience with it, but if it was that easy to make that suggestion, how common is it for other situations in the city?
It sounds like it came right to the agent's mouth quickly, doesn't it?
It was a tool in their toolbox that they were familiar with.
Yeah, it wasn't like, oh, I heard a rumor, sometimes people do this. It was like, okay, you can do this. Well, that's a wake-up call. I mean, I wouldn't know what to say if somebody all of a sudden pitched that. But now, other land bank, we're talking to Gary Davenport, who's a coordinator with the Mahoney County Land Bank, which operates out of Youngstown, Ohio, and the county surrounding it. But in a conversation we had not long ago, this has become common throughout Ohio. I don't know how old the legislation is, but I think you said 30 or 40 different jurisdictions are now involved in land banking?
Yeah. The idea came out of Michigan in the Genesee County Land Bank, and there was a pilot in Cuyahoga County in Ohio. That's Cleveland area.
Right.
And they ran a land bank there, and based on their performance, there was a law written, and it was passed so that any county could opt in to having a land bank. So it's not compulsory. It's necessary if you want certain kinds of funding, such as the hardest hit fund for demolition. But it's optional, and there can be several kinds of a land bank. Could be a standalone operation like the Mahoning County Land Bank is. I know treasurer's offices perform land bank functions, and I know of at least one situation where there is a CDC that is contracted to perform the land bank duties too. So there's a lot of ways to implement it, but it's an optional thing that we've been working on in Ohio, I want to say 2009, and The law has been updated a couple times since then, and it is now spread to 41 counties out of 88 in Ohio.
And do you hear much around the rest of the country? Is this land bank thing one of these movements that's starting up, particularly in Rust Belt states and elsewhere, or is this still an Ohio phenomena in Michigan and places like that?
I like to think of Ohio as a hotbed of land bank development, but I know that when we go to the national conferences, it's not – everyone knows what a land bank is, and these are usually people that specialize in real estate and vacant property issues. So I'm not sure what the status of land banking is in other states beside Ohio, but I think Pennsylvania is somewhere with it. And we're always trading ideas back and forth.
Well, I think you told me in Ohio you all coordinate pretty regularly.
Quarterly. There's a land bank network, and it is organized by the Thriving Communities Institute, and they convene once every quarter to talk about relevant news and share issues and solutions.
Well, sounds like that's a valuable thing. I know when we were looking at the Realty Track Fannie Mae transfers for Illinois and Michigan and Ohio, we saw a number of land banks in cities in Michigan, so obviously that's a hotbed too, and clearly from what you're saying, Ohio's got it going on. And when we were having some of these conversations, we talked about your former life as a community organizer. We ran into each other for a hot minute a couple of years ago with a very strong organization, at least for a period of time, the Mahoning Valley Organizing Project, right?
Yeah, Mahoning Valley Organizing Collaborative started in 2008, and I came on board in 2012 as a neighborhood organizer. And their first major campaign when they started up was vacant properties. And that's kind of a big catch-all term, but they started with some landlord campaigns where you had ownership of properties that weren't being maintained, people being taken advantage of in their rental situations, living in dangerous conditions for the renters and the neighbors. So that was a successful campaign, and I think they extracted several demolitions out of them and the payment of taxes on tax delinquent land. And from there, it snowballed into other things. And coincidentally, one of them was lobbying for land banking in Ohio.
Oh, okay.
And I got to work with several of the people that were on the buses going down to Columbus to tell the story about Youngstown's neighborhoods and how we needed to try a new idea about how to revitalize land.
Well, and one of the issues or campaigns that you were involved in that seems to me very unique and successful had to do with a foreclosure bond, as you called it. And that's exciting, given all the foreclosures that are out there. There are always foreclosures, but certainly there's been a huge surge of them since 2007-08 all around the country. How does a foreclosure bond work? And even more important, how did y'all win it?
So a bond is set in Youngstown, at least, when there is a vacancy at a property that is in foreclosure. And this is a regular foreclosure, a mortgage foreclosure, not a tax foreclosure. In those cases, the city sees that there has been a case filed. They check their information to see if it's registered as a vacant property. They go and inspect to see if it's occupied. But if it is unoccupied and it is in foreclosure, they send a letter requesting the bond to the plaintiff. So that is the trigger, is the vacancy and the filing of the foreclosure. There's a $10,000 bond sent to the city, and they keep a $200 administrative fee. And what happens, nothing may happen. If the property is maintained, then they don't need to use it, and they send the money back when the foreclosure finishes. So there's an incentive with the foreclosure bond that banks will complete a court case, and you won't have cases of people being hassled by a city to demolish a property that they thought the bank took 8 years ago.
Right.
That happens all the time, and we hear about it at the land bank directly. In my organizing, that was one of the constantly repeated stories from too many people. So we hope that it's an incentive for a bank to actually either dismiss or bring the foreclosure to completion. We also hope that it allows the city to maintain a property despite the fact that it has been abandoned. And they do that by defining the owner of the property as a cover term for whoever has the most stake or interest in a property, legal or financial.
Which is usually the mortgage holder.
Correct, especially when they have declared their interest by filing the foreclosure.
Exactly. And how do they work with the difference between servicers and the actual, we've read everything. We've all become experts in what a tranche is. What a word, tranche. The poor French. But the securitization of mortgages created, I know when I was with Acorn, this huge negotiating dilemma for us where we were meeting both with banks and then on the other hand meeting with these huge servicers. You know, it was one of these button, who's got the Burton? You know, Deutsche Bank would show up as the ones triggering the foreclosure, but they were really only selling the tranche, and it was actually all these, you know, blah, blah, blah. But so how did they sort out, how was that sorted out between servicers and owners and mortgage banks?
When I was around, and to the best of my knowledge, the plaintiff got the letter. So if it was a servicer or directly a bank, it didn't really matter. They just were to pay the city that bond to ensure that the property didn't go into blight. And I know that the larger banks like Deutsche Bank and Chase pretty much complied within the first 6 months. Okay. I know that there were some other banks that didn't right away, and there were some servicers that didn't right away. But my understanding is at this point, it's been in effect for 4 years. It runs and there's compliance, and it's a regular part of their vacant properties management strategy.
So this is not a moneymaker for the municipal jurisdiction. It's more like just keeping everybody held whole, so to speak. I mean, a lot of cities, this is a problem. Nobody maintains the property. They end up having to send the city mowers out there. I mean, a place like New Orleans or anywhere in the South, grass grows like weeds, you know. So you're mowing it every week or 2 weeks, but there you're making sure that if it doesn't happen, they're defaulting on the bond, aren't they?
Right. They'll take money out of the bond. I think in one case, there was a fire at a house that was in foreclosure, and the bond money was used to demolish it. And there are multiple examples in other cities now of how they may be using the money. But by default, it's just insurance to make sure that if there is an issue, the city has money and is paying out. I think that you know, the city received about 4% of its mowing back before they started a new strategy recently. And that went on for years, hundreds of thousands of dollars in just mowing.
Absolutely.
And it was mostly responsive to neighbor complaints. It wasn't everything. And they never saw the money back. So this is a way that the taxpayer is not burdened with transactions that may or may not be happening, but are based around the property and the ownership that is in question.
Well, it's actually better than insurance, Gary, because even the mortgage holder, servicer, or bank, they got the money back if they do right. Insurance, we're just throwing the money against the bet. We'll, you know, go south or get unhealthy or die or whatever. Now, you also were involved in a campaign around a registry for vacant lots. What was that about?
Yeah, so before I came an organizer and before the foreclosure bond campaign, there was a campaign in Youngstown to readjust their housing code, make it more modern, and adopt some progressive ideas. And one of those progressive ideas was a vacant and rental property registration program. And at its core, it's data-driven, and they're recording who has a vacant house and who the owner is, because the tax data, which is primarily ownership and property data and where you can contact people at, oftentimes not accurate by the time the house is vacant or abandoned. So it was a way for the city to organize the work that it was already doing, and the rental property registration likewise. Those ideas, I'm not sure what city they came from, but those ideas were active elsewhere, and the residents thought we should try to adopt this in Youngstown to give the city more tools to be able to manage the issue. It seems like since the last 10 years or so, we've only hovered around 4,000, 4,500 vacant homes. So how do you wrap your hands around that in a city where the steel industry left in the 70s, and there's been depopulation and foreclosure ever since? So the foreclosure crisis, when it came to Youngstown and Mahoning County, it hit, and people felt it. But there have been people feeling that for years. When I started to do my campaign, they understood and told me about that, people that had experienced it. So all of these tools that they were trying to pass in the previous campaign for progressive ways to manage property is a response to depopulation, disinvestment, and foreclosure that's been going on for decades and left all these abandoned, blighted houses.
Exactly. But now, were you saying this is also a rental registry as well as a vacant property registry?
Correct. The city tries its best to know where there is an active rental situation as well as vacant properties. And I'm not sure what the hit rate is right now.
Well, because in these days of Airbnb, that's obviously a very contentious issue in many, many cities trying to win a registry of who's got property for rent. And because of this, like I say, the Airbnb kind of phenomena, a lot of places, a lot of people are resisting. Cities are seeing this as an income source as well, as, you know, essentially forcing people to have to register and therefore have some standard of habitability as well as pay a fee, obviously, because they're maintaining a a rental operation, even though it's not a month by month. It's on demand Airbnb, however you want to refer it. But it sounds like y'all in Youngstown, you got ahead of that issue if people are already having to register all rental property.
Yeah, it was a good move, and we built on it with the foreclosure bond, and the city has significantly beefed up its ability to enforce code enforcement issues at houses. And our understanding when we were campaigning is that the city had not really done that in a long time. So in addition to the legislation, there is a campaign to get the city to adopt a new legislation as practice and get out there and do sweeps and figure out who these out-of-town owners or in-town owners were that were letting their houses fall down next door to people that were just trying to get by.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm not sure Youngstown is a big Airbnb site for a lot of tourists to come in. So, but regardless, it's a good tool. So let's talk about, this has got to be something that other communities have adopted, not only the land bank, but foreclosure bonds and maybe even this registry. Is that true? Is that have you found a lot of uptake interest in terms of these kinds of tools?
Well, we initially talked to people in Springfield, Massachusetts, where they had...
Oh, I spent a lot of time in Springfield. Now you're talking about something. Okay.
Okay, so there's and there's a lot of great organizing going on there. I think Nobody Leaves Springfield and is one of the groups that were there that we talked with. They had the legislation, and then it was stopped. It was passed, and then it was stopped by a court case. But we looked at the legislation and started talking to our partners, and they said this could be rewritten for Ohio law. There's no reason the city couldn't do this. And
is this the anti-displacement group, ADT, or whatever they used to call themselves?
Correct.
Okay, because I remember, I can't remember her name now, but I visited there, and I didn't know if they were still active or not, but that's great. So they originally had won something similar?
They had a city council person that had campaigned on that, became a city council person, organized passage of it, and then went out and on to other things. But yeah, they were stuck for a long time without being able to enforce it because of the court case.
Fantastic. Okay, so you took it from Springfield and rolled it around. Where's it gone since then, do you know?
So Canton passed it first.
Okay.
And then we copied Canton's version because they'd kind of done translation for Ohio. And then we passed it. And then we enforced it. So we passed it in January of 2013, enforced it in April. And then Canton began to enforce theirs. So they just had a longer period of time before they adopted it. Warren, Ohio adopted it eventually. And I want to say Cleveland Heights has been looking at it. I don't think there's been adoption. I don't even think it's been introduced. And Euclid. So there's a number of cities in Ohio. And I know Poughkeepsie was looking at it in New York. I haven't kept track of it in a long time, so I don't have an accurate picture right now, but I know that there's at least a handful of cities in Ohio that have adopted it.
It ought to be big in Phoenix and Vegas and a lot of other places where foreclosures have been, you know, off the chain, but hopefully we'll get some of the word out because this has been very helpful. I started my organizing career in Springfield, Mass., so I love hearing about that. My first arrest was there. Welfare rights, late 60s. Ah, the times, back in the times. I still go back there from time to time, every time somebody invites me. But that's good news if they start another snowball rolling. I've already blamed them, for a lot of what Acorn did. We've been talking to Gary Davenport, who's the land coordinator for one of the coordinators for the Mahoning Valley Land Bank. Gary, if people want to know more about this and how they can get information on what you and I are now calling these tools for cities as well as land bank movement, is there some place they can go to a website or reach out to you or anything?
Yeah, our website is at www.mahoninglandbank.com, and they can find some basic information and some ways to access our services there. they can always feel free to call us at 330-259-1040. And I'm option one if they want to talk to me about something specific. Anyone here is always willing to share what we're doing. And the land banking has been about sharing ideas. So we'd love to be able to help people if they have questions about what we do.
Gary Davenport, option one. Thank you. This has been Wade's World for another week, the world where the other half lives, where we talk about things you've never heard. And as Lucinda Williams sang, things you've never seen and will never forget. We say it loud, we say it on the air, we say it on the radio. Until next week, when we're going to have somebody talk about a union musical. You'll hear more about that. This is Wade Rathke for Wade's World.